Well, it's Ari Rosenbaum. I'm here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's subject, we're going to talk about when a plan sponsor has to fire their 401k TPA. Not something I enjoy talking about, just based on my experiences and whatnot. But, of course, first things first, let's talk about some of the events that are going on. Of course, this episode drops on that day of that 401k podcast. That 401k virtual conference number 8. That's at noon Eastern Standard Time. So if you download this episode ahead of time, you still have time to sign up. And of course, the conference is going to be available on YouTube later that day in case you missed it. That 401k virtual conference number 9 is going to be the last conference for 2020. People say, I can't believe the year has gone so quickly. Not this year. Every other year, you say, oh my God, this year is, you know, it's one of those things. It's like the end of when time ran out. You just want it to be over. And that's how, you know, all of us feel about 2020. So that's going to be on December 18th. That's a Friday. And of course, 12 noon Eastern, 2-hour event. A lot of fun. Of course, this will be the last virtual conference before the big one, as we call it. That 401k National Virtual Conference, January 21, January 22. You only have less than a half a week or less than a week to sign up for the early bird rate of $20.21. Of course, there are additional packages if you want autographs from Walt Frazier and Doc Gooden. That ends on Thanksgiving. $20.21, heck of a bargain. Walt Frazier will be there. Doc Gooden will be there. The Retire Holics will be there on day two. Day number one, got my buddy Ron Ehring, who MSNBC commentator, Al Jazeera commentator, more importantly, former national spokesperson for Ted Cruz for President 2016 and Ted Cruz for Senate 2018. He'll give his perspectives on, obviously, January 21 will be the day after the inauguration of what will look like Joe Biden as the next president, number 46. So it should be fun, and also just booked, finally confirmed, Jamie Raskin, congressman, Democrat from Maryland, good friend of mine. We'll get 15 minutes with him. You know, obviously, right after inauguration of what looks like to be a Democratic president, Congressman Raskin is obviously going to be held up for time. So he was very gracious to give me 15 minutes of his time, and he was very gracious way back when, which we'll talk about, and how to kind of, you know, in a way, I'm going to throw in a question that's going to not embarrass him, but just mention that, you know, so much of what he did for me back then, he probably doesn't realize that, you know, everything, all those talks that I had with him way back when is one of the reasons you're listening to this podcast and you'll attend the conference and all that kind of stuff. So, Congressman Raskin is a good old-time dear friend of mine. On Thursday, you should get these ahead of time. On Thursday, December 3rd, we're going to have that 401k virtual bunch. Tentatively scheduled is Larry Davis. Larry Davis, for those that attend the live conferences, know Larry Davis because Larry Davis is my booker, I guess, for guests. But more importantly, Larry is a good, longtime old friend that I met through Richard Larita. I knew him way back when he was a vice president of Steiner Sports. He's been so much a part of the events that you see, that you saw live. Obviously, virtually, you know, he's the guy behind Walt Frazier and Doc Gooden booking these events. So I'll have a nice discussion with Larry because Larry is, in my opinion, one of my favorite movies of all time is The Shawshank Redemption. And Larry Davis is Red. That's the Morgan Freeman character because Red can get things done. Red was the guy who would just, you know, you wanted a poster of Rita Hayworth or Jane Fonda or Raquel Welch. Was that Raquel Welch or Jane? I think that was Raquel Welch. That's right. It was not Barbarella. It was 3,000 million. Was it 3 million BC or whatever? But anyway, he also got the the hammer for the stone, which, of course, Andy used to get out of jail. I'm sorry, the movie is from 1994. If I spoiled the ending for you, it is what it is. So Larry will talk to us. We'll talk about, you know, sports, marketing, and how Larry gets his hands in everything. He's somebody really to admire. I'm sure he'll talk about his 6 weeks or however long at Brooklyn College. And after leaving college, he did get an education of a lifetime that really bears fruit to this day. So that's going to be on December the 3rd, 4 p.m. Eastern. Larry Davis, should be a fun discussion. So let's get back to the topic of firing the 401k TPA. I'm a huge Mets fan. And back in the late 80s, mid 80s, the Mets were fantastic. 84, 85, 86, 87 was a down year because Doc had his rehab, first rehab assignment. 88, team lost to the Dodgers in 7 games in the NLCS, which still to this day stings me more than anything the Mets have ever done since. 2006, Beltran looking at the called third strike against Wainwright. The collapse in 07 and 08, losing the World Series in 15, losing the wild card in 16. The worst thing to me was the 88 NLCS. And Davey Johnson was the manager of the Mets, and he was a very laid-back guy. He wasn't a yeller. I think that he was one of the best fits for that team. But the problem with the Mets in those days, we didn't have the wild card. We didn't have multiple, you know, three divisions. You know, this year, 16 teams out of 30 made the playoffs. In 87, you know, two teams in each league made the playoffs. So there was always something going on with the Mets, injury-wise, or just underachieving. And Davey was always under fire. And Davey was probably the greatest Mets manager there ever was. I mean, Gil Hodges is probably considered number one because he died so suddenly, and he had the 69 World Series team, and he was really... Gil Hodges was the favorite adopted son of Brooklyn, boy from Indiana, marries an Italian girl in Brooklyn. There's a school named after Gil. The Marine Parkway Bridge has been named for Gil Hodges ever since he passed away. So, you know, people always say Gil, but, you know, when you look at Davey in terms of playoff experience and winning teams, he was able to manage a lot longer than Gil did because Gil died in April of 72 during the strike, and he passed away of a heart attack, which is scary when you think about Gil Hodges, because I think Gil died at age 47, and here I am at age 48. I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think of Gil Hodges' life and the Marines and Dodgers and managing with the Senators and the Mets. But anyway, when Davey was under fire, I think that was 89 or 90. He was fired 42 games into the 1990 season. The team was 20-22. They replaced him with Bud Harrelson. But I'll never forget when somebody called in. Davey had a show on WFAN, which is the sports radio. And somebody said to Davey, isn't it true that you're hired to be fired? And I always love that comment. So 30 years later, over 30 years later, I still use it. Essentially, when you're hired... you're hired to be fired, meaning eventually when you're hired as a plan provider or hired as anything, eventually you're going to be let go one way or the other. It's just a fact of life. And there are some times when you just, you know, plan sponsor really has to fire their 401k TPA. I don't like firing people. Just a week and a half ago, I just fired the gardener. My house. Why'd I fire the gardener? Because I was constantly leaving messages that I wanted a tree above my shed, my neighbor's tree that's above my shed, and I wanted it cut. I wanted it cut because, you know, with a snowstorm or whatever it's going to be in the winter, I don't want that large branch to fall on my shed and puncture and destroy the roof of it. So, sent a little note with my check to the gardener. Called up a couple times, left voicemail messages. He comes one Saturday, 2 weeks later, and says, okay, show me what you need to get cut. I'll do it, but I'll do it next Saturday because I don't have my equipment. So I said, okay, here it is. Here's here's the big branch. And it was quite obvious he knew what needed to be done. So the next Saturday, I see one of his big little trucks. I guess it's the tree removal truck in front of my house. It's there on that Saturday. Sunday, I go to my backyard again, and that branch is above the shed. So I gave him every opportunity. I called up and just left a message. Your services are no longer needed. I'm going to get a new gardener. And he calls up later, and his cockamamie excuse was, we brought the truck out, we were ready to do it, but I got called to another customer with an issue. And I said, okay. Like I said, your services are no longer rendered. That was it. I don't like to fire people. Many years ago, it was a Saturday Night Live skit when the night that the Cincinnati Reds won the World Series in 1990, Lou Piniella was the manager, and hosting Saturday Night Live that night was George Steinbrenner, who had been recently suspended by Faye Vincent for conspiring with a bookie by the name of was it Howie Spiro, Spira, to dig dirt on Dave Winfield. So one of the skits, Steinbrenner was running a convenience store, and he just kept these people on the job doing nothing, and people were saying, well, why don't you fire these people? And George Steinbrenner says, oh, what kind of person just fires people at the whim? Which was, of course, mocking him, having fired Billy Martin 5 times and Dallas Green, Clyde King, forcing Dick Houser to resign, Bob Lemon 2 times, Gene Michael 2 times, Bill Verdon, all these, Lou he pushed out a couple of times, all these really good managers, and that's what, Steinbrenner was doing. So, there are people who get glee out of firing people. I think I've worked for bosses like that. I don't get it. I don't like confrontation. I like everybody to get along. I like stuff to get done, but unfortunately there are situations where it can't be done. So where are the situations where you got to fire the 401k TPA? Of course, first things first, kind of easy. We live in a world of transparency these days as compared to 2012 when we didn't have fee disclosure regulations. But obviously, if the fees are unreasonable for the services provided by the 401k TPA, that is reason to get rid of them. Because the fact of the matter is that as a fiduciary, a 401k plan sponsor has the highest duty of care and equity in law. And one of the important fiduciary duties is to pay only reasonable plan expenses, which means plan expenses have to be reasonable for the service provided. You know, if people want to hire a 316 and want to have a really concierge type service, they can pay extra for it. That's not a problem because they're getting more services. But, the problem with fees, I find, is that most plan sponsors take that fee disclosure paperwork, the forms, and just put it in the back of the drawer. They throw in the garbage like they would with those privacy statements they get from their bank or other financial institutions. The problem with these fees is you don't know what's reasonable or not until you go out in the marketplace and benchmark those fees. Many years ago, my wife and I used a contractor. Lovely guy. Did a couple of jobs in the house, put in a garage where there used to be one, whole host of other things, changing some of the format. Basically, 20 years before we bought the house, there was a dentist who lived there, and he finagled the downstairs as his office. So it was kind of like a maze of offices, and small offices, which were essentially bedrooms. And Frank, his name, redeveloped that area and made 2 bedrooms, extra closet space, all that kind of stuff. Frank was a lovely guy, and the work was decent, but the problem was we didn't realize how expensive he was until he came out with a fee after we had some flood work that needed to be done, where some of the walls had to be cut, because there was water damage on the sheetrock, and Frank was just more expensive. And that's when we realized that Frank was probably always expensive, and we checked the price, and, somebody was substantially less. So we were paying a premium. And, if my wife and I pay a premium on contracting services, that's on us. That's our own fault. We don't have a fiduciary duty to every other you know, any other people. It's our responsibility, and we screwed up. You know, hit us on, we could hit ourselves on the wrist. But when you're dealing as a plan sponsor, you're a plan producer, you can't do that. You can't pay more than you're supposed to. And that's why it's important for a plan sponsor to shop the plan around every couple of years, benchmark the fees using, you know, a service or the 401k averages book, you know, and, you know, determine whether the fees are reasonable or not. And if they're not reasonable, you could always try to bargain with the TPA. And if they're not willing to bargain, it's time to go. But the problem I always find with bargaining, I don't like it in the sense that it reminds me, many years ago I worked for TPA. And there was this great conversion guy who did the plane conversions. And he had a salary, and he went to his former employer and got a job offer. And he looked at the pay, and it was a substantial increase. And he went to the current boss and said, can you match it? And they did. And the problem with doing that was they never let him forget it, that, you know, he finagled a new job offer, and it was kind of disloyal. And I've never been one to ever do that. When I was an employee, if I got another job offer that was substantially higher, I accepted the job offer or I didn't. I never took it back to have it matched. And the reason I did that was because, number one, it shows disloyalty. But more importantly, I feel like the money was always there. They just never wanted to. The money for me in the increase was always there, but my bosses just didn't want to give it to me until they had to. And then you think all these years of being underpaid and how much that adds up. That's a problem. And so that's how I feel about TPA. If you negotiate the fees down, not because a plan, you know, hit a certain asset size, but just out of the blue because you got a matching offer from the new TPA, the question that I have for you is, you know, should you have always, you know, shouldn't they have always given that to you? And that's how I feel about it. So, you know, I would leave in that circumstance. But, you know, again, fee disclosure regulations, you got the forms, you don't check the reasonableness of it, you don't benchmark it, you have unreasonable plan fees. Well, you know, Department of Labor regulations on fee disclosure will say that you have a prohibited transaction. That's not something you want to have. So, again, unreasonable fees, great way to fire the 401k TPA. Number two, I mean, making too many errors. You know, I was a TPA attorney for 10 years, almost 10 years, 9.5 years. And, I mean, you know, a good part of my job, I used to say I should, you know, wear a fire chief hat because, you know, a good part of my job was fixing the errors that our plan administrators caused. That's a problem. You know, and the problem being a plan sponsor is you're essentially at the mercy of the TPA's competence. And I always say the most important plan provider is the TPA because they do the bulk of the work. And the bulk of their work is what lands 401k plan sponsors in trouble, which is usually discovered on a plan audit by the government, or it's discovered on a conversion to a new TPA. You know, nobody gets audited and gets in trouble because their advisor did something wrong, except, you know, when the advisor steals or, you know, not having a, investment policy statement. I've never seen a plan sponsor get in trouble for that. But, you know, again, the bulk of the trouble is what, a, you know, TPA did, because TPA does the bulk of the work. And obviously, you know, if your TPA doesn't complete the Form 5500 timely, doesn't perform the ADP, ACP top heavy test correctly, these are problems. You know, yeah, the TPA is negligent, but at the end of the day, it's going to be on your desk to pay any fees and penalties. You know, as a 401k plan sponsor, you can't afford to have TPAs that make too many errors, and it's your fiduciary duty to only hire competent plan providers. That's why I've always been against these payroll provider TPAs. I don't think they do a good job as the independent TPAs out there whose primary job is to administer a plan. Another reason, too much turnover at the TPA. You know, again, there was one TPA shop I worked at, actually both, I would say, But one, I made a joke that we had this really nice fancy door in the city, and I always said that we should have installed a revolving door. And the reason why was because there was so much turnover, and turnover is a bad sign. Turnover could mean a company that's in distress. Turnover could mean a TPA that doesn't value their employees, doesn't pay them very well, and these people leave. Or it means their people are incompetent. So when I went from one TPA to the other, you know, because the TPA was going out of business, the block business was sold to Bisys, which is now Census. So anyway, this TPA hired a whole bunch of us, seven or eight people, and they got rid of, you know, five or six of their not good administrators and hired new good quality administrators. And I eventually, 6 weeks after arriving, I replaced the ERISA attorney, who made a tremendous amount of money and wasn't very, very good. He would draft plain documents where he prefaced safe harbor contributions on 1,000 hours and their last day, which I knew since the start of safe harbor contributions, that's not something you could do. So that was always a problem. So I think turnover, where constantly your point of contact is being replaced, is a bad sign of your TPA. Either it's a bad sign that they can't hold on to their people. It's a bad sign maybe they are in distress. It's a bad sign that maybe they can't pay their people well. Whatever it is, it's not something I think is good. Because the problem with business with constant turnover for the TPA shop, it takes the plan provider so much to constantly review and it's just a huge headache. It's a huge disaster. When you lose employees and hiring them and the turnover and getting them into the new position and giving them training, it's such a headache, such a waste of time. And again, I think it's a sign that something's wrong with the TPA. Next, they are reactive and not proactive. I always use this example. And I'm sure you've heard this before. I was dealing with a plan sponsor that the advisor recommended to us. I didn't have kids at the time, but this was a company that provided the kids' meals, the toys for, certain other fast food restaurants other than McDonald's. So they didn't have McDonald's. I don't think they had Burger King, but I think Subway and Wendy's and all these companies you didn't know had kids' meals because everybody thinks of Happy Meals. So anyway, I remember them well because they would give me samples that I could give to my niece and nephew. Long story short, the company was constantly failing their discrimination testing. The owner of the company, when the deferral rate was 12 grand, which I think was before EGTRA, she had to give up $10,500 because of a refund. It's a payroll provider TPA. I looked through the valuation report, and with just a $7,000 QNIC, they would have, fixed the testing, and she wouldn't have had the $10,500 refund. So, when you're the owner of the company, and you look $10,500 refund versus $7,000 QNIC, you're going to make the QNIC because it's going to cost you less than it would by taking the refund. So anyway, payroll provider TP never talked to her about a safe harbor contribution, which was amazing. A plan like that, especially when the QNIC was so, cheap, it made sense to have a discussion with her about safe harbor contributions. And it was amazing that the TP never bothered to do that. I did it, and they were a happy client for so many years, and they would constantly remind me about what I had done for them. So, as a 401k plan sponsor, if you have a TPA that's not proactive, that's reactive, doesn't discuss with you some of the changes in the law, some of the opportunities, I had a client once where, actuary on a DB plan, so, but, hear me out, DB Plane was great when it was only owners, and once they went from 6 owners to 12 employees, which included 6 owners, the defined benefit plan was too costly. And again, the provider, the TPA, didn't bother to explain it to them. So you want, you know, a TPA that's reactive, doesn't sit back and let time, you know, time go and doesn't discuss with you the changes that, you know, could be made to your plan, whether it's a law change that you can take advantage of, like, for example, the safe harbor contribution, the non-elective, where you can add it after the end of the plan year, that kind of stuff. They don't discuss it with you. I really think it's time for a change. And last but not least, lack of communication. Everybody gets barraged from me with emails, but, you know, I once had a TPA administrator try to explain both to me and to that conversion specialist that he reconciled the daily 401k plan on a quarterly basis, which I don't know how you can do that. Daily plan needs to be reconciled daily. But the same, you know, it can't be done well. And the same thing can be, you know, from TPAs, you know, the daily valued 401k administrator contacting only once a year. You only hear from them once a year. Census time, questionnaire time. That's not the time. You know, a 401k TPA should always be in constant contact with their plan sponsors. And they can use Constant Contact, great email software, on the expensive side. But, you know, I finally mastered the new formatting, the new editor for the newsletters. But, you know, a TPA really needs to be in contact with their clients. Otherwise, you allow a new TPA to contact the client and be more forthcoming information. And that could have that TPA lose you as a client because you want to hire the person, you know, the TPA that's more in communication with you. And so, you know, communication's key. They never get back to you. Many years ago, again, I worked at a TPA, and we had a plan administrator who would never answer his phone during the work hours. So the client would know that he was at his desk, but he wouldn't answer. And that peeved the client off. What do you mean, you know, he's not there? I know he's there, but he won't pick up the phone. That's the problem. A TPA can't be, you know, invisible. They have to be in constant contact with their clients, and that's really the way to go. Therefore, in my opinion, you can't be having a TPA that is not in constant contact with you. They have to reach out to you every so often. Big law change, you know, CARES Act, that way back when, Secure Act, all these different changes, communication about the Cycle 3 restatements, whatever it is, it's important that you get it done, and it's important that you understand that you need a TPA that is constantly in communication with you. So that concludes this episode of That 401k Podcast. Ari Rosenbaum signing off. And go to that401ksite.com for further information on that 401k National Virtual Conference. Because that early bird is going to end. And, you know, the early bird will be replaced by the late bird. So sign up today and hope you join me next week.